Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind these enemy lines known as USA Inc. Today's date is June the 30th, 2016. It's a Thursday afternoon coming to you from a pretty decent day here in North Carolina. Pretty sunny day, not too hot. Much of the country has, and I'm talking about the U.S., of course, is being hit by a heat wave. So if you're in those areas, make sure you stay hydrated. Before I get into the news topics for today in the main discussion or topic I would like to put out there for dialogue is I want to just give you an update. Tomorrow's the first, so I'll start working on the data for the Black Talk Media Project, for the radio station and all of that, different statistical reports that we keep just to, you know, gauge our reach into mass media, or reaching the masses is a better way to put it. So start looking for those in the next couple of days for those who are donors to the Black Talk Media Project. And I just wanted to thank a person, because we had a person who had been donating on a regular basis, you know, just a small amount of money, but every little bit helps. And so I saw that person had canceled their monthly donation, and I was thinking, well, times is bad out there for a lot of people. And then I was surprised, pleasantly surprised, where this person like tripled their monthly donation with a new subscription. So thank you to that person, because as I talked about on the other day with some of the YouTube videos of the different programming that you hear on this station, Black Talk Radio, and we uploaded to the YouTube channel, and how you know, first you have to deal with people claiming, you know, you're using their copyrighted material. Usually that has to do with music. We don't use, you know, not in any programming that I'm producing, I'm not using copyrighted music or anything. So that saves some hassle and whatnot. But the other day I got hit with a bunch of, you know, as I mentioned the other day, a whole bunch of titles of programs that we had uploaded saying that this isn't advertiser friendly. Well, I have always known that, especially for this program, but some of those programs and the topics that they were talking about, you would think that the powers that be would want people talking about those sort of things, like the 10,000. Member Farrakhan, we did the program where we had on the guy, he's a member of the Nation of Islam, and Farrakhan had issued that call for 10,000 who will stand in the gap, you know, between the police and the community and the guns, and you know, no matter who's doing the shooting. Well, some brothers who followed up on that, and you know, but they were, it was more of a program of conflict resolution. you know, nonviolent means, you know, to resolve in conflict, you know, between whatever parties. And it can be it the police and a family, or be it families who are feuding in a community. Do you? And so there, corporations are not interested in promoting that type of content. They don't want to advertise on it, and I know they don't want to advertise on a program where you open up talking about you broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. So I'm just saying, that's why crowdfunding independent black media again is important. And I just want to thank that individual, you know who you are, who tripled your monthly donation. Didn't even ask for a shirt or anything, just found that what we do as a collective here on this network is worthwhile. So, but the reports, the statistical reports will be coming out now. The last report did not include podcasts. Now, the reason it did not, and this next one won't, is because the service that we was using, again, you know, we run up against racism and white supremacy with some of these companies we deal with when you're unabashedly, unashamedly, and advertising yourself as a black network, even if that's an industry term. Black Talk Radio is an industry term. It's not something I really made up, but I was the first one to apply it to a brand. But that's an industry term, black radio. But then when you outright call yourself that, you know, then you start running into problems. So because we are nonprofit and we don't take in, our budget isn't very large, I've always tried to incorporate as much free stuff as possible. Still functioning network, just piecing together different stuff, and as much as you don't have to spend, you know, that's more where you could direct resources to other areas and whatnot. So, but since we had worked with a very, very small budget, I think like this year we might be averaging $250 a month. So very small budget. So I try to use a lot of free stuff in the overall operation. So one of the podcast statistics provider that we were using that's free to everybody, you know, and they just, you know, keep a track of your stats, and they may even present your content to advertisers and whatnot when you submit your fees. But they track every download and all that without getting into the technicality. So all of a sudden, you know, I can't submit any more podcasts, you know, because we got new programming coming aboard, new clients and whatnot. And so, you know, went to try to add a couple of more podcasting fees, and I'm running into problems. So, you know, I am looking at some paid services that's like $5 per feed. And, you know, so that's just going to be another expense, but it's an expense that, you know, we're going to have to be forced to use. I mean, in terms of the clients, of course, you can pass that along in a cost, but in terms of the programming that is paid for by the donors of the Black Talk Media Project, as certain amount of programming is set aside, you know, for on a first come first serve basis for community oriented programmings, and they don't pay for anything, and they just host their programs. So but those right there, I'm gonna keep a track of the stats. So just as soon as I get it set up, I've been in talks with a company, as soon as I get that set up at a reasonable price, then we'll start providing those podcast stats again. So let me go ahead and jump into the program. Today is just a news day, and a topic that I'm putting out there for discussion for anybody to chime in that wants to chime in, share observation, opinion, or what have you. So let's just jump into these news stories. I got quite a few. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on each and every one. But I felt like these were important. And once we go through these, again, I want to talk about the unbridled hate that's being thrown towards light-skinned people like myself, light-skinned black people who identify as black, and biracial people, like one of my comrades, the host of New Abolitionist Radio, Max Parthas. And I've noticed on social media this hate spiked up again, this colorism after the speech was given by the actor by the name of Jesse Williams, and he's much more than an actor. He is also what would we call him? I don't want to call him no civil rights activist, even though he, you know, kind of mentored by some of those former actors like Harry Belafonte and whatnot. But he's a humanitarian or counter racist. That's what we'll call him. He does engage in counter racism, whether he calls it that or states it publicly. Who knows? You know, he may be being codified. Everything ain't for everybody to know what you're doing, you know. But I would call him, I would call him a counter racist, and because he has a white parent, and you know, so he's biracial, so he can't be down with the cause. But some of the criticism is much troubling than that. I mean, it was like men acting like jealous women. And I talked about that a little bit on New Abolitionist Radio, but I didn't want, you know, that program, we had topics to discuss. But this is part of this dialogue I want to have today. But it's just ridiculous, man. It's just ridiculous. It's exactly what a white supremacist master chess player the kind of moves that they making and whatnot. But some of these guys, though, man, they were acting like women. They're like hating on this dude because he getting attention from all these different women. Then it turns into, oh, you just like him because he light skin, you know. And I'm like, man, really? Do we really have that many adults running around with that type of immaturity? And, you know, all feelings hurt and also insecurity. You know, I thought we was past that. I thought the darker skinned brothers was past that, you know, once Wesley Snipes achieved stardom. And it's not like he the first dark skinned brother, you know, to be featured in white people's movies and stuff like that, or to be called whatever, you know, objectified as a sex symbol or what. He not the first. So I don't understand where all this insecurity is coming from. Maybe it's like maybe this ex-girlfriend that I had, who, well, actually mother of my last child, I have one child with her, and she's dark skinned, and she had an issue, you know, with self-esteem, and it's cause of a family member who mistreated her as a child and would say, you know, nasty things pertaining to her color and whatnot, because she was the dark one in the family. So I'm not saying that, you know, we don't hurt each other. And then, but that's the issue. And we continue to do that with hateful names, with petty childishness and, you know. But at the same time, I think there is an underlying issue of, it's a lot of hurting people out there for a lot of reasons, and it's manifesting through colorism. It's manifesting through that, you know. And but you know, let me tell you, it has been no pick. Let me watch my words, but it has been no party living in my light skin all my life. You know what I'm saying? Like I had told Cleo Monago, who was a dark-skinned, same-gender-loving black male, who is a counter-racist. And, you know, he kind of shot me talking that colorism stuff on Facebook and saying, you know, Jesse Williams got to say what he said because of his light-skinned privilege. I'm like, anybody has free will, has opportunity when they go up on that stage to say whatever the hell they want to say. If you think the system of white supremacy pre-approved that speech that he gave, then I don't know. I just really don't know, you know, where your thought processes is. But before I get into all of that, let me go through the news. But I just want to set that up after we get through with the news. If you have any thoughts on this, it may seem even childish for me to cover the topic, but I mean, I'm like seeing widespread hate and participation, and it's just dominating when everybody should be focused where he was telling you to focus on: racism, white supremacy, uniting, directing your resources from frivolous spending to things that matter. to make Black Lives Matter. I mean, how it jump off into some colorism and you know, some jealous hatred because women are digging on this dude for whatever reason. I'm like, you know, man. So let me get through this news, though. Let me get through this news. I published an article yesterday. I don't know if you had an opportunity to read it. Are the Clintons trying to intimidate U.S. Attorney Loretta Lynch? Now, you may think that that's a crazy headline, or I'm just, you know, using that for clickbait or something like that. And yes, that does play a role because, I mean, you write stuff. You want people to read it, right? And unfortunately, people are trained to, you know, basically hone in on their headline, and it, you know, depends on their headline whether or not they actually click through and read the information. So, but this is a serious question. This is a serious question because, see, a threat doesn't always have to be explicit. You don't have to just come out your mouth and say, you know, I'm going to kill you if you don't leave me alone or you know, quit messing with me and all of that. That is a threat. Okay, that is against the law. It doesn't have to be explicit. You know what I'm saying? But if you have a reputation of having the ability to harm people and things of that nature, then, you know, you just pay somebody a visit, you know, and that could be seen as a threat. I remember, you know, I had a drill sergeant. She was a female, a Black woman. When I first went into the military and I was in basic training at Fort Jackson, South Carolina. And so she had said some messed up stuff to me, right? I was in her office and I don't even recall why she called me to her office, but I'm standing, you know, at parade rest and I'm listening to her and she had said something messed up to me. And so I'm looking at her, you know, like, you know, man, if I wasn't in this uniform or in this situation, I'd just walk off from you. But she interpreted my look to be one of hate, like I was intimidating her or trying to intimidate. I ain't said a word. I'm at parade rest, but I guess my eyes, you know, gave her away or something, or gave me away or something, that I ain't like what she was saying to me. And she was saying, like, she could bring me up on charges for nonverbal threats, I think is how she phrased it. So anyway, that is what I'm asking. Did Bill Clinton just threaten Attorney General Loretta Lynch? He showed up. Now, she's been going around. This is part of President Obama's. Remember, he had the little policing commission after, I think it was Ferguson, he set up this commission. And so they were supposed to come up with some recommendations. And so this is kind of part of that, where she has been going around on a tour, a national tour, to promote better community policing, quote unquote. And so she had a pre-planned event to go to Arizona, and this probably is, I don't know if her itinerary is public or not. You probably, being this is a national tour, can find out where she's going to be speaking, probably at the Department of Justice website, find out what the schedule is. But the sources that I read from said that Bill Clinton, who was in Phoenix where she was flying to, said he got a phone call from one of his aides or something like that, that she was flying into Phoenix. Bill Clinton goes to the airport and meets with her. Now, this wasn't no pre-planned meeting or anything like that. All right. She was surprised that he met her on the tarmac. And then I'm thinking about when President Obama flew to Arizona, probably to that same airport in Phoenix, I believe, because that's the capital of Arizona, if I'm not mistaken. And remember, Jan Brewer put her finger in the face. She's a Republican and all of that, in the face of President Obama and what have you. That's how I kind of took it. Like, this dude trying to intimidate her. Now, why would he be intimidating her? Well, she will make the decision on whether or not his wife, his possibly his daughter, possibly himself, possibly a bunch of employees at the Clinton Foundation, a bunch of her aides and stuff, because you got a number of people who was working at the State Department for Secretary of State Hillary Clinton at the time from 2008 to 2012 who were also collecting a paycheck from a lobbyist group, and some of them were also employees of the Clinton Foundation. This is all improper. I don't see how it's hard for people to understand. Anybody, you know, that has a degree, at least, you know, even though I don't put much stock in degrees, that just means that you could take a test and regurgitate back to them what, you know, you read, or you could retain the information that they gave to you. So, but in terms of a critical thinking, I mean, even a casual legal observer should know that it is improper, while there is an ongoing criminal investigation, for Bill Clinton to stalk the Attorney General Loretta Lynch and meet her at the show up unexpectedly at the airport. Now, she should not have taken this meeting with him. But again, I don't know. I'm not her. I don't know what's going through her mind. I don't know if she's thinking about the impropriety or that, you know, that the optics of that. When she will make the decision on to seek indictments of a number of people, including Bill Clinton himself, but a number of people associated with him. He is a lawyer. Remember, this dude was a former prosecutor in Arkansas. All right, put a lot of black people on death row, a lot of people in prison and whatnot. Later became governor, came back for a photo op when they executed a black man who was functionally retarded. So, you know, this guy is a lawyer. His wife is a lawyer. They're surrounded by lawyers. That is highly, highly, highly inappropriate. And so she took the meeting. I don't know what she was thinking about, but she shouldn't have took the meeting. But after the meeting, I don't know how many minutes it lasted or whatnot. And then she was questioned about what they discussed, and she said, well, we're just talking about grandkids and stuff like that. Now, there's a major investigation going on, a criminal investigation, where he is a potential target, where we know his wife is a target. There's not just an investigation into her mishandling of classified material and then deleting materials, work-related materials, instead of handing them over but also the Clinton Foundation, the whole pay-for-play that everybody has been going to jail over here lately. A lot of these politicians, again, just last week, Chaka Fatah, Democratic congressman out of Pennsylvania, they getting close to de Blasio, as they've taken down at least three cops who were connected, and two businessmen that were connected to his fundraiser. They got the dude in Charlotte, the former mayor of Charlotte, Patrick Cannon, who's in jail now. I could Google it and come up with a bunch of names of people that have been prosecuted, sitting congressmen, whether they be state or federal, who have been indicted and no less convicted by the Justice Department under Loretta Lynch. And while I have really disagreed with some of her legal positions in the past, it does seem like no one is above the law when it comes to Loretta Lynch in applying their laws to these politicians. And so I think the Clinton family is worried about what Loretta Lynch would do. I'm not going to automatically buy in that she's into a cover-up. or what have you. People have noted that, you know, at some time in the future, she may have worked on a committee or something like that that the Clintons was a part of. But that is not enough evidence to suggest that she just automatically going to help the Clintons get away with major crimes. And there have been major crimes. I could do for a 4-hour program off of what we do know. And then what's coming out every day about clear violations of law. So that there's no even no argument there. So I believe that Bill Clinton stalked the sitting U.S. Attorney General, knowing this was inappropriate given the open criminal investigation of the FBI into his wife, into his foundation, to meet her, to use his ex-president status. And really, he's just a private citizen. Yeah, he run around with Secret Service detail and whatnot, but he is a private citizen. A private citizen that gets CIA briefs every day and security briefs every day, but still technically a private citizen. She should not have met with this man. In fact, all her security details should be told that whenever the Clintons come around her, to keep them away. But I think this man was sending a message. Sometimes it's not what you say, it's what you don't say. It's just by showing up in your presence. This is a clear stalking. And now everybody want to throw, you know, suspicion upon the Attorney General and not really, you know, focusing on the Clintons. And make no mistake, people have ended up dead and in prison. Business partners, their ex-business partners and whatnot, they're working on the same deals and part of the same stuff. And these people, I guess they fall on their swords for the Clintons. The Clintons always seem to escape prosecution. I think they're really worried this time because so much evidence is there. Vince Foster, you know, people say that the Clintons had him killed, but I don't really buy into that because they don't provide no evidence. But I read a credible report from a Secret Service agent who wrote a book who said that really Hillary bullied that man into Vince Foster in the suicide. He was already suffering from depression, and then they were being investigated and the pressure of that. And then they were saying behind the scenes that Hillary Clinton was like just berating this man every day about how stupid he was and just vicious, and that's why he killed himself. She bullied him, in a man who was suffering from clinical depression, was seeing a counselor at the time on medication, and she just bullied this dude, man, into killing himself. Wow. Then Deron Brown, you know, that was an airplane that had mysterious engine failure. The former travel secretary, I believe Ron Brown, was one of the few black cabinet members of Bill Clinton, and his plane crashed. So here we got Bill Clinton meeting her at the airport, just stepping off, showing up unannounced, uninvited, to meet her on the tarmac. Wow. Just the balls on this guy, man. They are just so blatant with it. They've been getting away. I mean, this is like mafia type stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, he the godfather. I don't understand why this isn't getting as much attention as it should. And as I was, you know, just researching, and as I was writing this piece about asking the question, did Bill Clinton threaten U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch, I was reminded, I came across a YouTube video of Keith Olbermann where Clinton was talking about Obama being assassinated. So when I listen to that, because I've said before, have y'all forgotten all the black people reportedly voting for Hillary Clinton, all these black misleaders in Congress endorsing this woman, all these church leaders and what have you, people leading these civic organizations, sororities and what have you. And I mean, have y'all even forgotten the racist campaign that the Clintons ran against Barack Obama? Y'all just got amnesia, don't you, as you call Donald Trump a racist. And yes, Donald Trump shows all the signs of being a racist. While he didn't admit, his company, his family company back in the 70s and the 80s didn't admit to practicing racism and housing discrimination against black people in certain boroughs where they had apartments in New York City, because he didn't, you know, all they had to do was to settle lawsuit without admitting wrongdoing. They were supposed to stop practicing racism, but they never did. And so, yeah, we saw him blow all these racist dog whistles, still, you know, using questionable language. So there's no doubt. There's plenty of evidence that we could say Donald Trump is a racist, possible white supremacist. He may or may not be a billionaire, but he's certainly got power. He has influence. Remember, you know, behind the scenes, he was buying influence with the Clintons and other politicians on both sides of the aisle. So he know how the game is played, this man. So, yeah, he a racist white supremacist. But let's not act like Hillary Clinton isn't. Like, you gonna, man, really, really? The people most responsible for putting the most black people into slavery ever in the history of the United States? And we're talking 200 years plus of history. If we want to talk and go back to colonial history, we talking about 400. They are part of that conspiracy to maximize the potential of the exception clause of the 13th Amendment, which says they can put you into slavery if they convict you of a crime. Put a whole 100,000 more slave catchers on the street. And she's not a racist. Called your kids super predators. I mean, it's just crazy, man. Ordinary people. Ordinary people. Some educated, so-called educated, got degrees, and they're expressing these views. And it's just so illogical. It's so illogical. Now, I know some of these people being paid to troll the internet for Hillary Clinton, that super PAC paying people to do that, but some of these are people I have known for a long time, and it's just not making any sense. Have we forgotten? So I'm gonna remind you. I'm gonna let Keith Olbermann remind you of how dangerous and racist the Clintons are. But first, we're gonna take this station identification break. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News on the Black Talk Radio Network. I'll be back on the other side.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Finally, tonight, as promised, a special comment on Senator Clinton's assassination remark to the editorial board of the Argus Leader newspaper of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Once again, it was this. Asked if her continuing fight for the nomination against Senator Obama hurts the Democratic Party, she replied, quote, "I don't, because again, I've been around long enough. You know, my husband did not wrap up the nomination in 1992 until he won the California primary somewhere in the middle of June, right? We all remember Bobby Kennedy was assassinated in June in California. You know, I just don't understand it. You know, there's lots of speculation about why it is. The comments were recorded, and we showed them to you earlier, and they are online as we speak." She actually said those words. Those words, Senator, you actually invoked the nightmare of political assassination. You actually invoked the specter of an inspirational leader at the seeming moment of triumph for himself and a battered nation yearning to breathe free, silenced forever. You actually use the word assassination in the middle of a campaign with a loud undertone of racial hatred and gender hatred and political hatred? You actually use the word assassination in a time when there is a fear, unspoken but vivid and terrible, that our again troubled land and fractured political landscape might target a black man running for president, or a white man, or a white woman. You actually use those words in this America, Senator, while running against an African-American man whom, against the death threat started the moment he declared his campaign. You actually use those words in this America, Senator, while running to break your greatest glass ceiling and claiming there are people who would do anything to stop you. You, Senator, never mind the implications of using the word assassination in any context relative to Senator Obama. What about you? You cannot say this. The references, said her spokesperson, were not in any way weighted. The allusions, said Mo Elithi, are, quote, historical examples of the nominating process going well into the summer, and any reading into it beyond that would be inaccurate and outrageous. I'm sorry, there is no inaccuracy. Not for a moment does any rational person believe Senator Clinton is actually hoping for the worst of all political calamities. Yet the outrage belongs not to Senator Clinton nor her supporters, but to every other American. Firstly, she has previously bordered on the remarks she made today, then swerved back from them and the awful skid they represented. She said in an off-camera interview with Time on March 6th, primary contests used to last a lot longer. We all remember the great tragedy of Bobby Kennedy being assassinated in June in L.A. My husband didn't wrap up the nomination in 1992 until June, also in California. Having a primary contest go through June is nothing particularly unusual. We will see how it unfolds as we go forward over the next 3 to 4 months. In retrospect, we failed her when we did not call her out for that remark, dry and only disturbing inside the pages of a magazine. But somebody obviously warned her of the danger of that kind of rhetoric. After the Indiana primary, on May 7th, she told supporters at a Washington hotel, "Sometimes you got to calm people down a little bit, but if you look at a successful presidential campaigns, my husband did not get the nomination until June of 1992. I remember tragically when Senator Kennedy won California near the end of that process." And at Shepherdstown, West Virginia, on the same day, she again avoided the word assassination. "You know, I remember very well what happened in the California primary in 1968. As you know, Senator Kennedy won that primary." On March 6th, she had said assassinated. By May 7th, she had avoided it. Today, she went back into an awful well. There is no good time to recall the awful events of June 5th, 1968 in Los Angeles, of Senator Bobby Kennedy, happy and alive, perhaps for the first time since his own brother's death in Dallas in 1963, galvanized to try to lead this nation back from one of its darkest eras, only to fall victim to the same scourge that took that brother and Martin Luther King. There is no good time to recall this. But certainly to invoke it 2 weeks before the exact 40th anniversary of the assassination is an insensitive and heartless thing. And certainly to invoke it 3 days after the awful diagnosis and heartbreaking prognosis for Senator Ted Kennedy is just as insensitive and just as heartless. And both actions open a door wide into the soul of somebody who seeks the highest office in this country, and through that door shows something not merely troubling, but frightening. And politically inexplicable. What, Senator, do you suppose would happen if you withdrew from the campaign and Senator Obama formally became the presumptive nominee and then suddenly left the scene? It doesn't even have to be the dark curse upon the land you implied today, Senator, nor even an issue of health. He could simply change his mind, or there could unfold that perfect storm scandal your people have often referenced, even predicted. Maybe he could get a better offer from some other and wiser country. What happens then, Senator? You are not allowed back into the race? Your delegates and your support vanish? The Democrats don't run anybody for president? What happens, of course, is what happened when the Democrats' vice presidential candidate in 1972, Senator Thomas Eagleton, had to withdraw from the ticket after it had been proved he had not been forthcoming about previous mental health treatments. George McGovern simply got another vice president. Senator, as late as the late summer of 1864, the Republicans were talking about having a second convention to withdraw Abraham Lincoln's renomination and choose somebody else, because until Sherman took Atlanta in September, it looked like Lincoln was going to lose the election to George McClellan. You could hypothetically suspend your campaign, Senator. There's plenty of time and plenty of historical precedent, Senator, in case you want to come back in if something bad should happen to Senator Obama. Nothing serious, mind you. It's just like you said today. We all remember Bobby Kennedy was assassinated in June in California. Since those awful words in Sioux Falls, and after the condescending and buck-passing statement from her spokesperson, Senator Clinton has made something akin to an apology, but without any evident recognition of the true trauma she has inflicted. I was discussing the Democratic primary history, and in the course of that discussion mentioned the campaigns both my husband and Senator Kennedy waged in California in June in 1992 and 1968, she said, at Brandon, South Dakota. I was referencing those to make the point that we have had nomination primary contests that go into June. That's a historic fact. The Kennedys have been much on my mind the last days because of Senator Kennedy. I regret that if my referencing that moment of trauma for our entire nation, particularly for the Kennedy family, was in any way offensive. I certainly had no intention of it whatsoever. My view is that we have to look to the past and to our leaders who have inspired us and give us a lot to live up to, and I'm honored to hold Senator Kennedy's seat in the United States Senate in the state of New York and have the highest regard for the entire Kennedy family. Thanks. Not a word about the inappropriateness of referencing assassination. Not a word about the inappropriateness of implying, whether it was intended or not, that she was hanging around waiting for somebody to try something terrible. Not a word about Senator Obama. Not a word about Senator McCain. Not, I'm sorry. Not, I apologize. Not, I blew it. Not, please forgive me. God knows, Senator, in this campaign, the nation has had to forgive you early and often. And despite your now traditional position of the offended victim, this nation has forgiven you. We have forgiven you your insistence that there have been widespread calls for you to end your campaign when such calls, in fact, had been few. We have forgiven you your misspeaking about Martin Luther King's relative importance to the civil rights movement. We have forgiven you your misspeaking about your under-fire landing in Bosnia. We have forgiven you insisting Michigan's vote would not count and then claiming those who would not count it were undemocratic. We have forgiven you pledging to not campaign in Florida and thus disenfranchise voters there and then claiming those who stuck to those rules were as wrong as those who defended slavery or denied women the vote. We have forgiven you the photos of Osama bin Laden in an anti-Obama ad. We have forgiven you the fawning over the fairness of Fox News while they were still calling you a murderer. We have forgiven you accepting Richard Mellon Scaife's endorsement and then laughing as you described his deathbed conversion. We have forgiven you the quoting the editorial or the electoral predictions of boss Karl Rove. We have forgiven you the 3 a.m. phone call commercial. We have forgiven you President Clinton's disparaging comparison of the Obama candidacy to Jesse Jackson's. We have forgiven you Geraldine Ferraro's national radio interview suggesting Obama would not still be in this race had he been a white man. We have forgiven you the dozen changing metrics and the endless self-contradictions of your insistence that your nomination is mathematically probable rather than a statistical impossibility. We have forgiven you your declaration that some primary states count and some really don't. We have forgiven you exploiting Jeremiah Wright in front of the editorial board of the lunatic fringe Pittsburgh Tribune Review. We have forgiven you exploiting William Ayers in front of the debate on ABC. We have forgiven you for your boasting of your support among working, hardworking Americans, white Americans. We have even forgiven you repeatedly praising Senator McCain at Senator Obama's expense and at your own expense and at the Democratic ticket's expense. But Senator, we cannot forgive you this. You know, my husband did not wrap up the nomination in 1992 until he won the California primary somewhere in the middle of June, right? We all remember Bobby Kennedy was assassinated in June in California. We cannot forgive you this, Senator, not because it is crass and low and unfeeling and brutal. This is unforgivable because this nation's deepest shame, its most enduring horror, its most terrifying legacy is political assassination. Lincoln, Garfield, McKinley, Kennedy, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy. And for the grace of the universe or the luck of the draw, Reagan, Ford, Truman, Nixon, Andrew Jackson, both Roosevelts, even George Wallace. The politics of this nation is steeped enough in blood, Senator Clinton. You cannot and must not invoke that imagery anywhere, at any time. And to not appreciate immediately, to still not appreciate tonight just what you have done today, is to reveal an incomprehension about the America you seek to lead. This, Senator, is too much because a senator, a politician, a person who can let hang in midair the prospect that she might just be sticking around in part just in case the other guy gets shot has no business being and no capacity to be the president of the United States. Good night.
Wow. Guess where Keith Olbermann is now? He's no longer in mainstream television anymore. After he gave that blistering, accurate retelling of history, recounting of history of Hillary Clinton. What has changed? Nothing has changed about this woman, but apparently lots of black people have forgiven her. Just keep on forgiving her. But getting back to the context of whether or not Bill Clinton just sent a nonverbal threat to the woman who can end the Clinton family political dynasty, the U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch. And Bobby Kennedy was also a U.S. Attorney General. He was appointed by his brother that was assassinated. So the parallels in history, or the similarities in history, because, you know, history tends to repeat itself. But if I was the Attorney General, I would be very concerned right now about my life. Again, Bill Clinton is a lawyer, former prosecutor, just like she was a former prosecutor. He knows that it is inappropriate, and actually he could be arrested for trying to tamper with an open investigation. Again, I don't know what was said. I hope it wasn't just her in the room with him. I hope she had enough sense to have witnesses, like her security detail, and not just his Secret Service agents. But I would be very concerned. This was a nonverbal threat. I would even call it a stalking. He stalked that black woman. Got information. Tell me how that does not fit the definition of a stalking. She didn't invite him. She had no idea he was coming. He looked, had people looking up where she was going to be, getting phone calls, and then shows up where she's at unannounced. Just to talk about the grandchildren. Just to talk about grandchildren, for real, come on. Now, I know a lot of people is questioning whether she part of the cover-up or whatnot, but this would be pretty stupid if she did have an inkling to participate in the cover-up to take this meeting with him. I don't know what she was thinking. She could have been feeling intimidated, put on the spot, didn't want to, you know, seen publicly refusing an ex-president. I don't know. She has to answer those questions. But the questions should be put to Bill Clinton. Somebody should be sitting him. He should be sitting in the FBI office right now answering questions about what was his intent in approaching the U.S. Attorney General with all of these FBI criminal investigations going on. And again, Hillary Clinton, just going back to that video, she said it more than once. She insinuated this more than once. These people don't misspeak. They know it. That became a talking point within her campaign, as we're seeing from her emails now that's being released. They talked about the media strategy and how they could use people in the media to muddy the waters on her criminal investigation. These are very cold, calculating criminals. I hope nothing happens to the Attorney General. And I hope she ain't in on no cover-up. But given her track record and the track record of the Department of Justice of prosecuting public officials, be they Democrat, be they Republican, I would have to say she has a track record of not putting anyone above the law and being able to operate as an impartial system. Now, before I move on, I ain't really mean to spend this much time on this, but it's important, and obviously it's on my mind. But then I have asked the question, why did President Obama, after these people did this to him on the campaign trail, practice racism against him, even tried to plant assassination in the minds of these racist terrorist crackers out here, millions of them, potentially, to try to assassinate President Obama, to get the, you know, that's what they were doing, to plant in his mind, as Keith Olbermann alluded to, that he might drop out and say, oh, I'm scared and then I'm not going to go through it. I didn't really think about it, and she's calling for my assassination and what have you. I'm going to drop out. Why did he appoint her as his Secretary of State? And look at the mess that we dealing with now because of his decision. Did he feel threatened? Is he weak? What was going on? What kind of deals was being made behind the scenes? Now, I know, you know, he probably made a deal, which probably included a Secretary of State appointment, if she didn't campaign for him, because she was also sending the message she'll endorse a Republican. She would endorse John McCain. See, now when you see these neoconservatives, these Republicans, you see what's that Republican commentator who left the Republican Party, George Will, and all of that, they're endorsing Clinton. The Bill Kristols of the Weekly Standard, you know, his father goes is a racist, go all the way back to the 60s and stuff like that. All of that. Their willingness to even fundraise, the Bushes getting down with the Clintons. Come on, don't y'all think that's odd? If things are so partisan like they're supposed to be, like, you know, it's portrayed to be. No, there are certain crime families. There are gangs of white supremacists. They have different gangs. And it don't matter. It ain't the gang of Republicans versus Democrats. No, they recruit across party lines. So why did President Obama appoint this woman, and why is he now endorsing her? It makes absolutely no sense, except if he has that fear gene that people have, researchers are. They didn't come out with any conclusions or conclude. They say there's a probability that some black people had this gene that has contributes to fear or whatnot. But see, he ain't a descendant of enslaved Africans though, so I don't know if you could apply that theory to him. So maybe he just fearful for his life, and he just did what the Clinton crime family wanted him to do. Because it don't make no sense. Why would you give someone a job in your campaign who called for your assassination? Unless they was making further threats behind the scene that were never made public. So it's crazy. I'm going to go hit the phone line on this one. I see we got a caller, and I'll just be brief with the rest of the news stories. I will have to go over an hour, but that's okay. Area code 754, you're on Black Talk Radio News. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Hey, what's going on, Scotty? It's Sam from South Florida.
I'm surviving, man.
I know that's right. I'm doing the same, brother.
What's going on with you? What's on your mind?
Not much. Pretty much what you've been talking about, as far as you know, I've been paying attention to it as well on social media, with you know, all of the first it was the backlash of what he said, you know what I mean, at the awards, which he was had every right in saying, you know what I mean, he was right, he was dead right about everything. You got the backlash by him saying that at the awards, or he shouldn't have said it, or he's white bashing, or he's this. you know,
for the listeners, seeing, let me, you know, because we were just talking about this thing with Hillary Clinton and whatnot. But for the listeners, he's talking about Jesse Williams. That's the topic I put out there for thoughts, observations, and what have you. But in the context of, you know, where is all this anti-light-skinned black people, anti-biracial, and then the pettiness of, you know, dudes tripping, acting like they jealous because some women's in their circle like him or something, or is giving him some kind of praise for what he said or for how he looked. Why is you acting like a little old, you know, 12-year-old jealous of because you ain't get the girl or something like that? You know, it's just crazy, man.
Mm-hmm. I see it for what it is, though. It's when so much importance is put on everything on the outside of your skin, then something on the outside of the skin that is viewed by others as being just flat out better than you or better than what you have on the top of your skin, then you rank down. You know, you can use money, you can use Jordans, you can use cars, houses, and stuff like that to elevate your status. Once somebody get a bigger house, a better car, stuff like that, then your status is relegated to the bottom of that. And that's what happened with us with the light skin and dark skin. See, as good as somebody looks, we don't take stock in, like I said, the beauty of that person, who that person is. You know what I'm saying? It's an outside thing. Because, we keep it going, teaching ourselves, we have to buy these things to be impressive. We have to...
You're talking about where he was talking about putting the brands on your body. Now you're paying to put brands, you know, using the slave brands, where they will hit you with that hot iron and brand you. What plantation you belong to, who your master is or whatnot, and now we're spending all this money to put brand names
on us. Right. And that's how I view dark skin, light skin. That's a brand. There is no dark skin or light skin. It is melanin or lack of melanin, you know, to me. But you know what I'm saying? We all are the same when it comes to that. And we have to... Speaking of black people in this country, we the same. No matter how beautiful or how ugly you may think somebody is, those are just material things. Those are just things on the outside. Because we are such a material. We're so materialistic. It was pressed on us, and it was fed to us that if we, you know, we act in a certain way, we won't be beat down. We won't be hurt. We'll be allowed to have something. Well, those things progress over in my eyes. It progress over generations. The way you have this, you have it now. You have everything is materialistic, and you know now you see the guys. Oh, y'all just like him because he likes me. Or y'all just like him because he's freckled. Or y'all just like him because he's a white boy speaking black truth. I think I read somewhere, and I'm saying to myself. Black truth is truth, period. It's not black truth. It's the truth, period. Real history. If you take that eye out of it, you will see that. You talking about, they're using him being looking a certain way, having a certain status or whatever. They use that to get mad at him, to have something to get mad at when they just really mad at the fact that they don't love themselves. They don't have any love for themselves. They feel like they got to put something on to be somebody. So I think that's where that whole thing comes from.
It's self-esteem problems, man. Listen, I'm not going to say the person's name, but I either was interviewing this person or I heard them being interviewed, or it might have been a private conversation. I don't recall. It's about 2 years ago. But this is a light-skinned black female. Mm-hmm. And she was saying that, and this, I'm getting at how messed up we letting white supremacists get in our head with this programming and you know, this division. Yep. But she was saying that she had issues dating black men because she's light-skinned, because she don't know if they want to date her just because she light-skinned. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, buying into the light skin is viewed by white people as being better than dark skin. So you just want a light skinned black girl because you want me as a status. I mean, that's just so messed up that that's even in your head that you're asking these questions whenever any man, any black man, period, approach you.
Period. That's right.
Do he want me because I'm light skinned? Or, you know, do he want me because I'm dark skinned?
Because I'm dark skinned.
You'll be surprised. Because some people got dark skin fetishes. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Right. You, well, we know white people have that fetish about us anyways.
But I'm talking about among black people.
Like
my brother, man. My brother got a chunky fetish. All his girls got to be chunky, man. They got to be at least approaching 200. They got to be 170 pounds or more. And he don't weigh but 150. But he like his women chunky. That's his fetish.
That's his thing. Yeah. See, that to me, that's not a fetish. That's just a fetish is when you will like you might head dive in order to get what it is that you want, and that's what I see in our community. Like I see it going from just having a taste for something to actually a fetish, like you were saying with the light skinned sister. I live around it, so you know I mingle in it. So plenty to talk to. Either I already know dudes or just want me because, you know what I'm saying, I'm bright, I'm a yellow chick, I got tatted, this and that, whatever. And she's right. Everybody's been tricked into believing the material is what's that. But
what if a person just like you because you got a nice personality, though? You got a nice personality, the way you talk, you sound educated, whatnot. But you're questioning, do you want me because of my certain type of skin color? See, that's why I'm saying, man, we so many people, period, are just so messed up, man, psychologically, that we'll even put ourselves through stuff, man.
Yeah, it's competition. We've been taught to compete against each other at the base level. To me, man against woman, mother against father. You know, we compete against each other.
I ain't never seen those issues. Now, I had to say, you know, I live in a rural area where, you know, most of the black people are related to each other. You know, there might be two or three families that's not related to each other, but there are hundreds of them. You know what I'm saying? And
right.
So, but people, I mean, in the same family, from the bluest blackest person, you know, because we would, you know, call those people blue. You so black, you blue black. You know what I'm saying? You got a blue shine to you. We got those people in my family all the way to... You know what I'm saying, man? You know, if it wasn't for your hair, you would be white. I would think you was white. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you pretty bright, Scotty. You pretty bright yourself, so I feel what you're saying.
You know,
I'm a dog brother myself.
And but guess what? All of us been mistreated by the system the same way, regardless of our melanation level. And so I don't understand why we don't see all of our, you know, that's a little, if we're going to say that we have black unity in the community, your skin color shouldn't have nothing to do with it. The different melanation levels shouldn't have nothing to do with it. I don't mistreat my darker skin, black family members. I don't treat them no different than what I treat anybody else. You know what I'm saying? That's family. When I look at that person, that's cuz over there. You know what I'm saying?
Right. But that's not... Okay, take my family for instance. We are close by, you know, tragedy. You know, a lot of things happen in our family. So our family is a really close-knit. The sisters, they stuck together and they kept their children together and their children kept their children. You know what I mean? So we all know each other. But in this generation of my family, there's a split. And there's a split in my eyes because of materialism.
Is it materialism or colorism?
It's really both. But in my eyes, I'm not sure which one comes from which, but they're intertwined. Because... The materialism has been put on the skin. The skin is not it's not love no more. It's material. We look at our skin like, look, I ain't got none. I've had so much money so many times over that I could have got tattoos. I could have had all my mouth gold up, diamond up many, many times. I never did any of that stuff because it was material to me. I love my skin. My mom used to say that typical mom stuff. You can't get a tattoo. Don't ruin your skin. Mm-hmm. Don't put the golds on fronts on your mouth or on mm-hmm. your teeth and stuff like that. But I listened to that, but it was also internally I felt like, nah, man, I'm not gonna do my skin like that, because I view my skin as loving my skin, not as a material that I can get paid for. I can get comments from.
Now, let me ask you like this, Sian. I don't mean to. Let me ask you this. Now, you said you a dark-skinned brother, and so it sound like you was raised to love your skin. So, I mean, you know, it's just so many variables to this. Like I said, my ex-girlfriend who I share a child with, you know, dark skin as well. But when she was growing up, man, her light-skinned grandmother used to mistreat her because her other two sisters are light-skinned. They're like my color or a little darker than me. But she used to mistreat her and talking about she was so black and all of that. So that grandmother with her sick self and buying into, I guess, colorism. So it ain't no new generational thing. This been going on several generations. And so, you know, she would tell me how her grandmother would just be mean to her and say bad things about, oh, you so black or you know. Mm-hmm. I'm like, man, that's messed up, man. And she tried to overcompensate with that by you wearing weave, by putting in these different colored contacts, and I couldn't understand it, man, because she was beautiful to me.
But that's where you have the beginning.
Naturally, she was. Because when I met her, she was rocking her natural hair. And, you know, well, she did have a perm or whatnot, but, you know, she didn't have no color contacts or anything like that. Just the prettiest skin, I tell you, man.
Black, milky black. I know what you're talking about. See, my grandma ain't play that. You know what I mean? She was one of them. She was just up front and fell. She ain't play that. She didn't care what you look like. It was, if you a child, you were taken care of. If you was out of line, you was getting beat down, chastised some kind of way. Everything was just fair. I never spoken, but it was understood justice. But I've seen it. I've seen it in my family, away from my grandma. I've seen it. Me and my brother, like my parents. I mean, my father's side of the family. Like I said, they derived from the Carolinas, North Carolina, specifically by the mountains. Mm-hmm. But I haven't found out everything just yet, but I think they were chased from that. Like, they were forced to move from that area. And
yeah, it was a lot of terrorism going on in North Carolina.
That's right. It sure was. And see, they right out of Carolina. So I know that's where their roots said. If they left, they were terrorized out of
us.
So,
and see, that's the thing, though. Check that out, Sin. And I got to move on. We got another caller. But check this out, though. I'm in North Carolina as well, and my family faced immense terrorism. And again, I will have to say, though, at that time, of my grandfather was a very dark man. But my grandmother was, she could pack, let me put it this way, if not for the curls in her hair, some of the photographs I've seen, she could pass for a white woman. Oh, you know, in those black and white photographs and whatnot. You know, you might could tell and whatnot, but if she was trying to pass, she could pass. You know what I'm saying? And so it was a lot of light skin in our particular family at that time, but they ain't stopped them white supremacists from terrorizing us and trying to force us off our land.
Never have and never will. That's a part of it. That's what they is. That's who they are. They're terrorists.
Yeah, so I don't buy into, oh, light-skinned black people get treated better. Man, no.
Mm-mm.
No.
Mm-mm. They think they get treated on the onset, but trust me, after a while, like you say, when you get rid of everybody else, who else you think they going to get rid of? You.
Yeah.
I appreciate the commentary, Scotty. I know you got to get back to your show. I want to hear it, everything else, too.
All right, man.
I want to comment on Hillary, but I'm going to step back and listen.
All right. Appreciate you, Sian. Let me take a short station identification break. We'll pick up that next call. You're listening to Black Talk Radio. Before I do that, let me get some of these news items out the way. A political prisoner in Black Panther, Jaleel Montekin, has been denied parole. You can check out that link. A former Black Panther Party member, he's been to the parole board with an excellent record, no tickets, no trouble, denied parole for the ninth time in a row. All right, because they ain't trying to let out no black people who are political prisoners. That's the best way to describe them. They just political prisoners for daring to stand up against white supremacy and participate in programs to uplift their communities and protect their communities. The U.S. and NATO are threatening Russia at its borders. Russia is responding with its own troop buildup. You might have heard Dave talking about that, but yeah, there's a troop buildup on both sides. I say the U.S. started this. NATO is a terrorist organization. Look what they did to Libya in overthrowing Gaddafi and then just turning it into a terrorist training ground, you know, a terrorist safe haven for them to launch attacks into Europe and into Africa. Man, I'm telling you, man, everything that you're seeing on television, you're not seeing the true nature of the threat and who is behind the destabilization of the world. The KKK is on the rise again, given its protected status in the USA. SPL-related story, SPLC president urges Congress to stop ignoring white terrorists. Of course, I'm using my own language, but I'm summing up these stories. They had a little congressional hearing, Ted Cruz. Of course, they're going to focus on Muslims and Islamic terrorists after Orlando, but the president, I think he's Jewish, he may or may not be, but SPLC, that's the Southern Poverty Leadership Center, he testified, and he basically was telling them, yeah, blah, 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 but these white terrorists, though, you know what I'm saying, these white terrorists, though, they've attacked more law enforcement officers, more politicians, attacked more federal buildings, blew up more buildings than any other so-called terrorists. So what about them white terrorists, though, is what his message was to Congress. But again, there's another article. The KKK is on the rise, and I say, of course they on the rise. They got protected status. Hell, they got nonprofit status. They get to use bank accounts and EIN numbers from the federal government, collect donations, and it's all legal. This is a terrorist organization that has protected status by the U.S. government and the state governments, and they always have, and I presume that they always will. That's why I don't want to say this system, okay? All right, so those are some of the news stories. I'll go ahead and take this station identification break. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News, bringing you black news from a black perspective. We'll be back on the other side.
Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
You are
tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed and behind, from behind these enemy lines. All right, let's go to the next caller, area code 862. Thank you for calling in. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Reed.
How good afternoon.
Good. I'm calling a reference to a comment that was being made in terms of light skin versus dark skin.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, it's a shame that we're still in that era, because there are a lot of people out there in our community.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. You sound kind of muffled. You don't sound like your usually clear self. Is something going on with the phone?
No, do I still sound muffled?
Yeah, it might just be my speakers, but I understand what you're saying, but go ahead. Sorry for the interruption.
Oh, you're in another phone too. I'm so sorry. I don't know why it's acting this way. It still sounds muffled?
You're coming in now.
Okay. As I was saying before, so we're still in the black community where we still have these things that we still are on as far as like light skin and dark skin and the preference situation. Because there are a lot of African-American men, you know, still prefer light-skinned women. You know, I have my brother, that's the only person, only woman the other day, he always said how he liked light-skinned women, light-skinned women. I said, well, why do you like it? That was just his preference. I don't know, but he always, you know, see a light-skinned sister, and he's like, okay, that's just his preference. And I asked him, why is it that you like the girl? Well, I like the way, you know, I don't know. But when we begin to talk about the brother from BET making a statement that I was talking on another show on the station just yesterday, I think it was Tanya, and I was telling her, you know, about the whole branding situation. And that's so true. And like I said, I listened to it again and again, because he made such a provocative statement on BET. The platform that he used, Mr. Reed, was awesome. I am so proud, regardless whether he's dark skin, brown skin, whatever skin it came out, it was the right message that needed to be delivered at that opportune time. So I don't understand why we're focusing on what color skin he's in or whatever. I mean, that is so trivial. We should be trying to get the message that the brother was really bringing to the airwaves. I mean, regardless whether it came from, you know, a dark or light-skinned person, or somebody's being jealous, here we go again. Because, you know, it's funny when I think about that whole light-skinned thing. I remember when Jordan came out and how he changed kind of the landscape of dark-skinned men. Like, women were like, and it was a time when women were really going for the light-skinned guy. He had to be bow-legged or all this stuff that was out there. And then when it seems like when Michael Jordan hit the air, he was tall, dark, handsome guy who was, you know, but it seemed like it changed it, because it was always kind of like those stereotypic things in our faces, you know what I mean? So, I mean, you know, of course, again, media has a lot to do with it, you know, who controls the media controls the mind, but I'm seeing the evolution of that. I'm seeing that, you know, a lot of naturalness is starting to come in, so see they're starting to really go more natural with their hairstyles, brushing up on the week. So I think that we are making a change, and I just hope that people really do just really taking what this brother had to say, because he was just so provocative. I am just so proud, and I know that probably BET from now on, Mr. Reed, is going to probably censor what they probably got to say. They probably have to see the speech beforehand, because there were so many spies on that station that night. I'm like, I know they were like, what the heck is going on here? But I'm glad he actually made it through there and got a lot of messages, because that message is going to be played over and over and over again. So I'm very, very proud of that. And also, thank you so much for playing that. And Keith Olbermann?
Yes, Keith Olbermann.
I remember him, Mr. Reed, but during the Obama and Hillary stage, Keith Olbermann was never a Hillary supporter. If you ever look at all the commentaries, because he had a show on MSNBC for a while before it got canceled, and every night he would make a commentary about
he knew she was a racist.
I'm sorry?
He knew she's a racist.
Yes, exactly. He really was just, I mean, if I had to say who helped Obama win the election of Britain, Keith Olbermann did a doggone good job, because every night I would listen to his commentary about different things, and he was definitely on point. He was, that's one thing about him. He really gets to the root, and the shame he went back. That was his first love in sports, but he was an excellent commentator, so I was very happy to hear that.
But you see what happened to him, though, right? You see what happened to him after that.
He was too provocative. He was too truthful. They just couldn't take it. I mean, Keith Olbermann, I am telling you, every day I would look for his commentary, because it was so, he would be so on the money about so many different things, and that's why they got him. It was just too truthful. I wish he would have just went ahead and got his own, you know, other thing, but I don't know.
I think he tried. I think he tried, but I do believe he's back with ESPN, back doing sports talk radio, because you know that's how he started.
Was this commentary an offshoot? He just went into his own bag on ESPN with respect to this term?
Well, no. See, he started on ESPN as a sports commentator, but he would talk about sports in a social context as well. You know what I'm saying? The same analytical mind that, you know, he brought to politics, he was bringing to sports. So then he got into political broadcasting, you know, being a talking head on TV and whatnot. And he was really good at it. And so, but he made enemies of the Clintons, and the Clintons got a lot of friends in the media, and they quietly put the kibosh on his career. And so now it just seemed like he just now getting another job in mainstream media, but it's back in sports.
Back and forth. So when he made this comment, was this an offshoot of him being on ESPN?
No, the comment I just played.
Yes.
That was when he was on, let me see, give me just a second, I can tell you what station. This was on MSNBC. He used to have a show on MSNBC.
That's what I'm saying. I thought this was a recent something. This was
no. That was from 2008. I was reminding people of Hillary Clinton's character, as you want to, everybody want to point at Donald Trump and say he's a racist, and he is a racist, you know, but he ain't got the track record of the Clintons.
Okay. Mr. V, I thought that was something. I thought he was on ESPN, because, you know,
no, that was from 2008.
Okay, that's great. I'm definitely going to pull that up. But again, I thank you for your show of always, Mr. V.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Q&A queue is cleared.
Yeah, so that's the context. I was using that in the article just to remind people how dangerous the Clintons are, because the title of that article is "Did Bill Clinton Threaten U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch?" Okay, and certainly I take that as a nonverbal threat of him stalking her at the airport. There is just nothing right about it. He just wanted to talk about the grandkids. That was, you know, come on. Not that I'm saying she's lying and he maybe did just talk about grandkids, but I know she got the message. I know she found it odd. What? You know, Bill Clinton's on the tarmac, want to meet with me. You know, I'm investigating his wife. I'm sure a million thoughts went through her head. I just really want to believe that Loretta Lynch is, even though she is squarely a cog in this system, she working for this system, for USA Inc., but I don't want to say that she's corrupt, because in terms of applying the law, she seems to apply it to, she's known for prosecuting Wall Street crime, what they call, quote unquote, white collar crime. So she built a career in New York of going after powerful white men and white women in the corporate world. So she has done the same. I can't say, you know, her personally, but the Department of Justice under her leadership has gone after these politicians and gotten quite a few convictions. You know, I know the Supreme Court just let the former Virginia governor out of jail on a technicality, as I reported on Tuesday, but he was still prosecuted by the Department of Justice. And so that's why I'm saying the Clintons are absolutely worried about going to jail. And I didn't mean to really, it was not my intention to connect Bernie Sanders to this, but that's why Bernie Sanders ain't dropped out. The media and everybody else, it seems, is trying to pressure this man into endorsing this crook. And if he endorses that crook, you know what? All of his credibility goes down the toilet. Any credibility he has built up, you know. And again, he works for the system too. See, this is how the system works. These different politicians and what have you, they represent different aspects of what the system, which way the system is willing to go, depending upon the will of the people. All right, they may not tolerate all of this and that, so we'll give them an alternative and we'll make some concessions and stuff. And so Bernie Sanders, you know, is a Zionist, and that's my number one issue with him, his support for Israel, even though he recently been calling them out on their treatment of the Palestinians, and he's done that later in his career. But he still vote to arm them and give them welfare checks from the U.S. taxpayer every year. So, you know, the man is not perfect, but I'm telling you, he don't have the body count on his bill that the Clintons do. He just really don't. And I feel like he is willing to make certain concessions and talk to the people really in charge and push these certain things to bring some relief to the people. So if I was him, I wouldn't drop out at all. I would hang on until the convention. You see, Hillary Clinton was waiting on Barack Obama to get assassinated, perhaps, before, when people were saying she should drop out in June. Well, it's June now. Bernie Sanders shouldn't drop out. He should take it all the way to the convention and make these superdelegates put their name on the line as supporting a casting a vote. They can endorse all they want to, but are they willing to put their name on in the record as voting for the first presidential candidate to go into a race in under a FBI criminal investigation? And I mean, everybody know their history. Come on, man. So I wouldn't drop out. I hope he doesn't drop out. But to be honest with you, I'd rather see Donald Trump in there than Hillary Clinton. It will take 4 years for Donald Trump to really, you know, get his bearings and what have you, and learn how things work behind the scenes. And, you know, another 4 years, he gone. He could be a one-term wonder. You know what I'm saying? I'm willing to risk 4 years of Donald Trump than to risk 8 years of the Clintons, because like she told you, you don't get one without the other. They have a crime family. So let me move on on that. So that's why we played that clip about Hillary Clinton. So California has an adult use of marijuana act on the ballot. Law enforcement against prohibition. Neil Franklin, former slave catcher, now is on the right side of the battle lines against 21st century slavery and human trafficking. And, you know, he has really repented, gave a public apology for what he helped the system of white supremacy do to black people. Now he heads the organization made up of former judges, former cops, former prison guards, former defense attorneys, former prosecutors, professionals in the law enforcement who are against the drug war and want to end prohibition. And so he put that news out saying the Adult Use of Marijuana Act is officially on the ballot this November. I was reading that it would bring $1 billion a year in taxes in California alone. You know, you can fund an awful lot of programs with $1 billion a year. You fund a lot of schools with $1 billion a year. You might even can stop taking taxes from the people and just tax the cannabis. That's what happened in Colorado. They sent them people a rebate back. They made so much tax money off the cannabis. So we hope that passes. It is on the ballot, the Adult Use of Marijuana Act. Last thing I'm gonna say about Hillary Clinton, just, man, she's just so shameless, man. And this was by, now I know this was a strategy. There was no spontaneous event you saw of the congressman doing a sit-in, and it was not by coincidence that John Lewis was put front and center to try to use gun, the battle between over gun rights in this country and the Second Amendment and common sense legislation. But that whole political fight, you know, they're trying to use civil rights language and imagery and tactics and whatnot to try to, again, this is the best way I can explain it. Can't pull no punches. Know how the gay rights movement has hijacked civil rights movement tactics and you know, things of that nature. Y'all see the parallels in that, and how, you know, they try to attach themselves to that history and what have you. Same, this is what we're seeing now from the Democratic Party and trying to make gun rights a civil rights issue. This is what Hillary Clinton reportedly said. She was in Chicago with Jesse Jackson in the Rainbow Push Coalition, and she called gun control a civil rights issue. Let me just read a little bit from this article. Speaking in Chicago Monday, Hillary Clinton called gun control a civil rights issue and slammed Donald Trump as incoherent and selfish. Clinton, the likely Democratic presidential nominee, in delivering the keynote speech at a Rainbow Push convention luncheon, said, "I am convinced the tide is turning on common sense gun control." I mean, do Jesse Jackson, do black people in these political positions and other positions, you know, when once you're able to rub elbows with senators and congressmen and presidents and secretaries of states and all of that, man, do these black people just lose all self-respect? Because remember, man, the Clintons have demonized Jesse Jackson and what have you, made his campaign for president a joke, used his campaign to attack President Obama when he was running at, you know, in a racist fashion. And then you inviting them to your luncheon. I mean, it's just too much damn forgiving going on, in my opinion. I mean, damn, why would they change their behavior? You ain't giving them no incentive to change their behavior towards black people. Just keep forgiving them, welcome them into your homes, welcome them into your churches, welcome them into your civics organization after the long history of racism and white supremacy and harming black people and calling for black people to be killed and actually killing black people in Africa. Really, Jesse? Really? Come on. I can feel it, Clinton said. She praised U.S. Representative Robin Kelly, a Democrat, who was in attendance, for joining a recent sit-in on the floor of the U.S. House to call for gun control. See what I'm saying? Just straight up transparent to me of what they trying to. Everybody want to use black tactics and pay homage to the civil right, the black people participated in the quote-unquote civil rights movement, but when it comes time to actually doing something for black people, no. Just want to steal our magic, as Jesse Williams said, the magic Negro is real. Just stealing our magic, just using our magic for white supremacy. Clinton blamed the gun lobby for working to prevent legislative votes. They know what I know, she added. The vast majority of the American people support stricter gun laws. Clinton recognized, blah, 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 blah. I don't want to even read no damn more. But yet this woman approved at the Obama administration, and Obama ain't off the hook yet, gave a waiver to an African country that uses child soldiers and sold them a whole bunch of weapons to put in the hands of children to commit genocide against other black people in Africa. But nobody's talking about global gun control, are they? They want to be free to sell weapons all over the planet to dictators and whatnot, but, you know, want to restrict our gun rights here. How does that make any sense whatsoever? All right, so I don't really have too much more to say about this colorism thing, except for I think it's stupid. I think it's a tool of the enemy. I don't know where it come from, where it started. I know it's been around for a long time, but it's just ignorant to me. And I just wasn't raised that way. I haven't at all, you know, I'll be 50 years old in November, and I just don't recall having any issues of colorism when I was in school. Or I do recall one incident. It made me think about it. When I was in elementary school in Detroit, I might have been in the second grade. I remember this, man. And there was this guy, he was like maybe in the fifth or sixth grade. He was real big and whatnot. And I was like a little high yellow, you know, black boy with a nice afro and what have you. And we was on the playground. It had been raining, so you had like these puddles of water. And for, I don't even know this guy, didn't know this kid, just threw me in the puddle. And he was dark-skinned, so I wonder if he threw me. And now I'm thinking, I wonder if this dude threw me in that damn puddle because I was light-skinned. Because I don't see why he did that to me. Why did he do me like that? But that's the only issue I can possibly say that happened in my life that involves colorism. And as I was recalling all the different spectrums of black and blackness that's in my own family, even when I was in Detroit, man, I'm thinking about my God brothers and sisters and just that one family. You had them from high yellow to blue black. My God brother that taught me how to read was one of them blue black brothers. He was he taught me how to read, taught me how to write my name in cursive. This is before I even went to kindergarten or anything. I ain't never dealt with this. Just wasn't brought up around it. I never heard, you know, any of the adults talking that kind of stuff. Oh, they just like him because he light skin, or they just like him because he dark skin and all of that. It's hard for me to understand why people, especially grown ass adults, will allow themselves to be pulled into that kind of a distraction. And it is a distraction. It is a distraction. But even when he's distracted, because it's a distraction from his words against white supremacy and his call to action, it's a distraction from that. So instead of you know, thinking about, damn, I wonder if there's any organizations that I can become a part of to fight against all this slave catching that's going on in my community and the people that they're killing and all of that, you know, I'm focusing on these other women in my circle saying, oh, did y'all see Jesse Williams on BET last night and that speech he gave? And you, oh, y'all just like him. Black women just like these light-skinned dudes and because he got them funny color eyes and just totally just ain't even focusing on what the dude said. But again, you know, our communities have been programmed for this type of foolishness through the radio, through the television. So it's not that I'm making fun of people or I'm calling them out in particularly or anything in a negative way, because I know where it comes from. I know how susceptible people are to programming, and I should just be thankful for, you know, that I wasn't programmed with that colorism type stuff. But I tell you, as a, you know, Cleo Monago has said that Jesse Williams even admitted to benefiting from his light skin. Well, that's his experience. You know, people have different experiences, but let's not act like black people have not dark-skinned black people have not climbed the ladder of so-called success in this country, whether it be in the corporate world, whether it be in the military, whether it be in government. I mean, the first lady is a very melanated woman and whatnot. So don't talk to me about my light skin has afforded me some kind of privilege that you ain't afforded no privilege. The only thing that I see where I've had an advantage over my peers, my black peers and whatnot, is my name, Scotty Reed. I got a European name. I don't know why my aunt named me that, unless she was trying to tell me something about, you know, our Scottish heritage. But that name on a resume has gotten my foot in the door, has gotten me phone calls. You know, the lady did the little thing on Monster.com where she used, you know, a quote-unquote black sounding name. She didn't get no calls. And then she used a Becky name and she got a whole bunch of calls. Well, damn it, I didn't name myself. And I ain't got a problem with my name either. And if it's got my foot in the door, whenever I got my foot in the door anywhere, I've tried to bring in other people. I would check with family members first. Yo, you still looking for a job? Yo, boy, go down there and talk to this dude. You know what I'm saying? My family members have gotten me jobs. I mean, just about every job place I worked at, really, outside of the military, a family person has put me on. You know, a family member. I wasn't trying to sort the dark-skinned family members out from the, let me call the light-skinned cousin first and all. No, man. But that's the only thing I could see where I have benefited, whereas other black people won't. Well, maybe my aunt was being codified. Maybe she was seeing ahead and she was saying, if I name him Jamal or something like that, you know, they're going to be able to identify him as a black person. They're going to practice racism against. I can't ask her. She's dead. She died about 3 or 4 years ago, and I never really even thought about to ask her until after she passed why she named me the way she did. But I ain't got a problem with it. But I have not gotten any privilege of, you know, when I was chased by a mob of white people in Detroit as an 11-year-old, and they all had baseball bats and chased me and my cousins. I think my cousin was 2-3 shades darker than me. And then I think the oldest of us, he was like maybe 2 shades lighter than me. You know, one of them red brothers like Malcolm X, you know, red hair and all of that. And we got chased together by a white mob, a baseball team. Little kids with baseball bats with a bunch of the adults, their parents and coaches chasing us because we dare cut through this neighborhood to try to, you know, take a shortcut to where we was going. So I don't think my light skin bought me any privilege that day. Sure didn't. Most certainly didn't. And I came down here, you know, and start going to predominantly white schools and stuff, you know, even though I'm an honor roll student and whatnot who misses a bunch of days out of the year because y'all bore me to damn death and I'll just show up for the test and whatnot. But, you know, I'm a pretty good basketball player, but you try to keep me from playing basketball when academically I was really qualified because you didn't want to see a brother possibly get a scholarship to college and whatnot because he don't want to go by the rules and all that. I don't think my light skin afforded me any kind of privilege with Mr. Spears. I'll never forget that white man, a white counselor at East Gaston who used to call them white girls' parents and tell if they trying to even talk to a black dude, they would call them white girls' parents. Has Jesse Williams gotten any privilege because of his light skin? But I can't say. All of us don't have the same experiences in life. But I tell you one thing, Clarence Thomas, damn black skin, dark skin, did not stop him from ascending to his position on the plantation at the Supreme Court. Didn't stop him. No, because see, if you're willing to be down with their program and never really stand up for yourself or for the people or for justice or for what's right, you will get advanced through the system. We can use you. We can use your dark skin. And see, we've advanced this Negro and you can't accuse us of racism. And, you know, that's why we gave you President Obama. So So skin color really ain't got nothing to do with it, man. It's about your attitude. It's about your actions behind these enemy lines. It's about your willingness or unwillingness to be unapologetically black. And when I say that, I'm talking about speaking out against the injustice that black people speak out against. That's why his speech was such a big deal. It's not because his words did have substance, but it's a big deal is because you rarely ever see that. You haven't seen something like that. You would have to go back to the 1960s when Muhammad Ali said, I'm not going to fight in your war. You're against them Vietnamese people that ain't never called me nigger. And then Jim Brown, Lew Alcindor, a.k.a. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, a couple of other black sports stars of the day, did a press conference with Muhammad Ali saying, showing their full support of his decision not to go kill 9 white people on the behalf of a system of white supremacy. So we ain't seen that kind of black celebrity speak, you know, in such a brutally fashion, honest fashion against the system of racism and white supremacy and name exactly what it's doing. That's why it's such a big deal. And that's a shame in itself. That's a shame in itself. Every microphone that a black person gets in their hand, they ought to be speaking out against the injustices and all the human rights violations that's going on. It ain't got to be your whole acceptance speech or whatnot, but, you know, you can slip it in there some kind of way. But everybody ain't willing to take that risk because some people, like Jesse said, is in a contest to see who can accumulate the most butter biscuits. So it ain't really about your skin color, man. It's about your mindset. That's what it all boils down to. We gotta stop. And let me just put this out there. I know there will never be 100% unity in the so-called black community because we're a bunch of individuals first and foremost. I'm an individual. You're an individual. And we all have different backgrounds, different experiences, different education levels, different things that we have been exposed to, and those things shape our views on everything. And so it's just ridiculous to think that we're all going to see things the same way, you know. But there are just certain undeniable truths that we should be able to all get behind, regardless of even skin color, colorism in the black community, or, you know, just period. Like you know, Need Fuller has said, it's about the system of justice versus injustice. It's not really about black versus white. It's about justice versus injustice is what it all boils down to. It's about anybody can practice injustice regardless of your skin color. And then unfortunately, a lot of non-white people will practice injustice. So it ain't, you know, I'm not looking for no 100% unity in the black community. I'm looking for to unite with people who I agree with enough on enough issues that we can, you know, form some kind of partnership, some kind of alliance. I'll help you. I'll lend my expertise, my resources or whatnot, you know, on this issue that you're working on, because I'm down for that. I'm down for that. The other stuff that you're doing, I'm not down with. You know, that's you. That's, you know, you do you. Somebody else can help you with that. But on this, we can work together. On this right here, we can work together. I mean, no people is truly united. So I think it's also, you know, counterproductive to even trying to promote that can be achieved. I like the goal of I am one of the million.com, which is the website for the movement, 1 million black conscious voters and contributors. They're just looking for 2% of registered black voters. to do what, you know, the mission, which is in the planks to achieve those goals. Just looking for 2%. We ain't looking for 10. We ain't looking for 20. Ain't looking for 100, because we ain't going to never get 100. But if 2% of 40 million can get together, put their resources together, support one another, and work in unison in the area of politics and business, then we feel like we can really improve, you know, not only our lives, but the lives of other people in the community as well. So I don't have anything else. I'll check the phone lines. Nobody else has anything. This colorism, I hate it to really spend any time on it, but it's an issue, man. It's an issue. And apparently it's an issue when people that I'm connected to on social media, or else I wouldn't even be seeing it on social media. Don't be that guy. Don't be that girl. They take the focus off of the system of racism and white supremacy that's hurting us all, regardless of our different melanation levels. Focus on that. Don't become the distraction. Matter of fact, we're going to close it out, because what he said was so strong that we're going to close out the program with what Mr. Williams had to say. You've been listening to Black Talk Radio News with Scotty Reed. I will be back on air tomorrow for July 1st, Friday afternoon. I do have a guest scheduled. We'll be talking about a conference, a convention of the oppressed that'll be taking place in Cleveland, Ohio next month, starting off on July the 14th. So we will have a guest scheduled for Black Talk Radio News tomorrow. Recognize the fact that we live behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. A lot of bad things is happening to a lot of good people, and the only way that it will change is if enough of us step up to force that change. We can't keep accepting apologies from racist white supremacists and letting them into our homes and letting them into our churches and giving them money and casting votes for them. And you know, we cannot keep doing stuff like that and then expect this system to change one iota. It's not logical. And so it's not logical, but I understand why things are the way they are. And so through the Black Talk Media Project, we hope in the future that we can raise a mass communication network to help combat all of this programming that has our people acting in an illogical manner. Peace and blessings to all.
This award, this is not for me. This is for the real organizers all over the country, the activists, the civil rights attorneys, the struggling parents, the families, the teachers, the students that are realizing that a system built to divide and impoverish and destroy us cannot stand if we do. All right? It's kind of basic mathematics. The more we learn about who we are and how we got here, the more we will mobilize. Now, this is also in particular for the black women, in particular, who have spent their lifetimes dedicated to nurturing everyone before themselves. We can and will do better for you. Now, what we've been doing is looking at the data, and we know that police somehow manage to de-escalate, disarm, and not kill white people every day. So what's going to happen is we are going to have equal rights and justice in our own country, or we will restructure their function and ours. Now, I got more, y'all. Yesterday would have been young Tamir Rice's 14th birthday. So I don't want to hear any more about how far we've come when paid public servants can pull a drive-by on a 12-year-old playing alone in a park in broad daylight, killing him on television and then going home to make a sandwich. Tell Rakia Boyd how it's so much better to live in 2012 than it is to live in 1612 or 1712. Tell that to Eric Garner. Tell that to Sandra Bland. Tell that to Dorian Hunt.
That was actor Jesse Williams of Grey's Anatomy. He accepted the Humanitarian of the Year award at the BET Awards last night. Williams paid homage to the unsung heroes in the fight against racism and also spoke out against police violence. Many people were moved by the speech, including Justin Timberlake, who tweeted out a series of messages that some say were out of line. First, JT tweeted, at Jesse Williams, though, hashtag inspired. It was his response to one Twitter user that got the most criticism, though. Timberlake tweeted, oh, you sweet soul, the more you realize that we are the same, the more we can have a conversation. But then posted this, I forget this forum sometimes. I was truly inspired by Jesse Williams' speech because I really do feel that we are all one, a human race. And following that tweet up with, I apologize to anyone that felt I was out of turn. I have nothing but love for you and all of us.